702.
The Clement Manyathela Show.
Let's walk the talk.
It's 25 minutes before 11 o'clock now. So we started a new series about 2 weeks or so ago where we look at just the positive stories coming out of the African continent. We call it African successes. And thank you for those of you that send us suggestions. You can do so on cm@702.co.za. If you've come across some positive stories on the continent that we can feature on this segment. Today, we are celebrating African fashion and how it's taking over the world. According to a UNESCO report that was released last year, Africa's fashion industry is rapidly growing to meet local and international demand. I think currently, the African fashion industry is valued at just over $15.5 billion worth of exports annually, and the earnings from the continent's fashion industry. And that could triple over a decade if the right investment and infrastructure are there. That's according to UNESCO. And it has really, this African fashion, really been on the spotlight on the global stage. You look at brands like South Africa's Maxhosa, Imane Ayisi, Ayisi Couture from Cameroon, Toli Koka from Nigeria. You know, all of these people and more have become well-known brands. They've showcased even at various European fashion shows. I mean, most recently, South Africa's House of Decorum became the latest African fashion business to showcase in Europe with a debut at the Paris Fashion Week. So there's really been a noticeable increase in African showing at Europeans or Europe's fashion weeks. If you have been observing this rise in African fashion, I'd like to know from you, what are you picking up? What fashion icons or even fashion designers are you following that are doing the most on the global stage? Look at Thebe Magugu, our very own. He's also doing the most. Naomi Campbell has worn his clothes. Lupita Nyong'o, Miley Cyrus as well in May in 2022. When she announced that Fenty Beauty was coming to Africa, Rihanna was also wearing a Thebe Magugu merino wool fringe knitted dress. Michelle Obama was here not so long ago. She was wearing a Maxhosa dress. Maxhosa has also been endorsed by Beyonce. It's been worn by Alicia Keys. It's been featured in Vogue. So we've really been doing well. What have you picked up about Africa's fashion industry and what it's doing on the global stage? What have you made of this rise in demand for African fashion? 011-883-0702. That's where you can give us a call to join this conversation. Or if you've got some questions, the WhatsApp line 072-702-1702. Mphahlela Mokgatle is the co-founder of the House of Decorum, who's going to guide us through this conversation. Mphahlela, thank you so much for making time for us. Good morning.
Good morning, Clement. How are you doing?
I'm all right, man. First of all, congratulations as the House of Decorum for really the kind of achievements that you have had. You became the latest African fashion business to showcase in Europe with a debut at the Paris Fashion Week. How was that experience for you guys?
Incredible. I must say it was out-of-body experience. It's actually different. I mean, when you're watching it on TV or fashion TV or YouTube, it's different to be experiencing. I mean, it's a different world. I mean, Clement, I can tell you back that the biggest world. I mean, when you're in Paris, it's a 9-day showcasing of different brands, big brands. And as an independent brand, to be amongst the best, it's something else. I mean, and it actually shows us that as Africans, we actually can do it. It's just about actually going out there and saying, well, let's put our best foot forward. And, you know, the world is really an oyster, but you have to be in the space to actually experience it. It's a different experience altogether.
Yeah. What do you think is behind this growth and rise in African fashion demand? Because what we are seeing is, you know, even these global superstars are now, every time, you know, whether they're launching something on the continent or they're attending an event in Hollywood, you know, they want to go for some of our African fashion designers. What do you think is behind this rise in the success we're seeing in African fashion?
You know, Kevin, there was a point in time when it was all about, you know, fashion appropriation or, you know, African appropriation.
Yes.
Now we're at a point where it's about Africa appreciation. And that's what's happening. You know, the storytelling is coming from the Africans now. Yes, we've got this international globalization as global citizens, but no one can tell a story about a Mudianye or like a Sotho man who grew up in Lesotho that knows that it comes from a mountain. You know, we're getting a point where we can tell our authentically South African or African stories by South Africans or Africans in the space. I mean, my Xhosa's telling a story about the Xhosa heritage, the Xhosa culture. No one can tell it better than him because he's a Xhosa man. And that's what's happening, you know. Gone are the times with the international brands with just appropriate simple patterns, but they can't tell the story. I mean, if I say to Clement, please tell me a story about the Scottish kilt. You can't tell it better than someone from Scotland.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening. The rich heritage embedded in the African roots is being told by Africans, but the beauty of the globalization, you know, when social media started hitting, now we can say, hold on here. This is my pattern. I created this pattern. I mean, we saw it last year. There was actually a point where Balmain had some jewelry on some of their stars at the men's show last year. And Tongoro, who's a Senegalese designer, said, but hold on, that jewelry art work before social media, you know, the global net binding us, we can't even say, but hold on, that's my pattern. I created that. So the globalization has really done it, but also over and above it, it's the events, you know, the access to going to these markets and showcasing the fairs that we are now getting into. It now gives us an opportunity to tell the stories, the really rich African stories.
Uh-huh, yeah. Well, which other African designers are also, making their name on the international stage? You mentioned Tongoro from Senegal and others. I mentioned Abo Tebe, Matlosa, you guys. Which other designers and also just other stylists are also doing it big and are being noticed on the global stage?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the likes of Pupo is a stylist per se, but he's also making it big. I mean, just came back from Nigeria. You've got photographers like Trevor Stierman, who's also in the industry. You know, you've got Oswald Boateng. I mean, Oswald Boateng is actually from Africa. Oswald Boateng now stays in London. But you see, this is the beauty of it. You know, he realized the environment wasn't right. And I mean, you know, it's some of the challenges we face. The environment wasn't right. Let me actually go to London, live in London. But if you actually get into a plane today, the British Airways uniform was done by Oswald Boateng.
Wow.
And Africans actually created the whole fleet. The entire uniform is done by an African. So it's amazing. There's actually a lot that we are doing. I mean, Matosa, of course, Abo Tebe are doing brilliantly. And there's a lot that we're actually doing as Africans. But I think we need to take it to the global scale and let everyone know. And I think this platform is brilliant because we can share these stories that people probably don't know about.
Is the appreciation only coming from outside of the country, outside of the continent? Or are you seeing more support for fashion designers and Phahlela? Because sometimes, you know, sometimes people complain about how expensive some of these custom-made outfits are, but people don't mind going out and spending 60,000 rand or 100,000 rand on an outfit from Gucci or from Versace. So there's always been a question around the appreciation for what our local designers are creating and actually paying what that a kind of outfit, that material is worth. In your experience, are you getting the support more from outside the continent, outside the country, or are you getting more support locally as well?
It's been a mixed bag, if I may say. You got some, so we pretty much dress, you know, your executives, your CEOs, the likes of Clement that are on the show that understand, you know, what a merino wool is, what a Super 150, what a Super 180 is, what a Loro Piana fabric is, what a Drago fabric is, as opposed to a fabric that is actually polyviscose. So there's a lot of education that we tend to do with our clients to actually understand this is what you're actually getting. And a lot of the times this is where the misconstruing comes in, because I mean, a normal South African consumer says, but why am I paying so much? But they don't actually understand that, you know, first and foremost, the mills that we used to have in the Eastern Cape, the mills that we used to have in Cape Town are gone, they're closed. We don't actually have mills. We don't have a merino sheep roaming in South Africa. You're actually getting the fabric from out of the country. So that increases your costs. So the first and foremost, your costs are already expensive from just bringing in the fabric, because the raw material for it to be at that quality, that standard that you want. A Clement walks in and says, I want to have a suit that when I go to an international platform and I'm sitting next to my Italian counterpart, they must ask me, is this from Italy? Where did you get this? They must actually see it that it's at the global standard. So to get the global standard, first part is the fabric. And we are paying excessive amounts because first and foremost, you're importing the fabric. So you're going to incur the arbitrage because remember, we now buying in euros and you're sitting with a rand. It's 1 rand to 22. Already you're suffering from that point in time. It comes in, you hit customs, you hit VAT. By the time that fabric lands on your lap, how much have you already spent? So there's all those elements that actually come into play. Coupled with the load shedding, coupled with all the problems that we've got as a South African economy, you've got all these costs that you're incurring before you even get the product out to the consumer. So that cost then gets on charge to the consumer. Had we had all these, call it, ecosystem plays within the country where the mills are working, the sheep are being farmed, the cotton has gotten in South Africa, then it actually drops your price because then your inputs are not as high. I mean, it would not make business sense to actually buy fabric for 30,000 rand and charge 20,000 rand for a suit. You're running onerous contracts. So you're at a point where now the business side of things, and I think as a lot of creatives, and I mean, I don't think we actually speak about the cost implications of getting a garment made. We're always talking about, yes, but this is Gucci. And there is also, it's very important to know that the brand in itself also speaks. So from a price point, you also need to say, but what has the brand done? You know, people want to see momentum. Clement wants to know, what have you done so that I see value in your product? As opposed to say, just pay me more because I'm African, I'm South African, support local. No, but what value am I getting? Because you'll only pay where you see value. So there's always that balance between price, brand, and value.
011-883-0702. Have you picked up this rise in African fashion on the global stage? And how has it made you feel when you see the likes of Beyonce, of Alicia Keys, Miley Cyrus, Lupita Nyong'o, Naomi Campbell, you name them, all these big superstars, global superstars wearing garments that were produced here on the continent, but also by African designers. And do you, how intentional are you about supporting local as well? I've got a number of WhatsApps that are coming through, but before I get to them, Mpahlela, I want to ask about, because you mentioned some of the challenges that as African designers you often have to come across. And I know UNESCO, when they were telling us about, you know, how much money African fashion industry and at what rate it is growing, they also spoke about the challenges. So they said that the industry is valued at just over $15.5 billion worth of exports annually. But one thing that they've also made clear is that this could actually triple over a decade with the right investment and infrastructure. So where would you say the help is needed by the local fashion designers on the continent? Is there enough support from government? Are we seeing a lot of investment? What kind of interventions would you like to see when it comes to even the infrastructure you need as designers?
Yeah, Clement, I mean, that's actually a brilliant question. And when you look at her holistically, I mean, it's both private players and public players, you know, to say, here's the capital outlay for factories. I mean, I'll give you an example. You know, if you look at Christian Dior at the moment, they actually employ 196,000 people at Christian Dior, which is part of the LVMH group. But if you look at Bernard Arnault, he's not actually a fashion person. Bernard Arnault is actually a private equity player. So they actually saw, let's us acquire businesses to grow it into a conglomerate. There's the business side of fashion. And I think that's what we need. We need business people to start realizing that there's a business side. This industry is worth more than 2 trillion. I mean, the clothing industry across the board. I mean, Africa's just the tip of the iceberg. If you look at the trade deficit on, yes, we're a big industry, but what are we actually importing in just fabrics? I can tell you that already Africa's at a deficit because of those importing to just get the production going. So we need factories. We need to start having our own production lines. We need machinery that's got AR. We need automated machines, but that's a lot of money. You know, government has got interventions such as your IDC, your CIFA, your NEF, and those are put in place. But that's literally just a little bit, because if we want to be at a level of a Christian Dior, you need to have the training starting at the grassroots. You know, if you look at how many schools, I mean, back in the day, there was a subject called woodwork, and we didn't understand why would you do woodwork, you know? And that was actually for the artisans. We don't have that in school where someone says, I'm in class to do dressmaking or pattern making or cutting or sewing. We don't have that at grassroots. So the whole ecosystem needs to work. I mean, there's an amazing factory actually in Worcester called Hextex. If I want to get fabric from there done, they can make it locally. But for it to get to Joburg, the trains don't work. You know, so it's all these things at play. And if they start coming together, the Africa Free Trade Agreement is great because then it can give us the access into the different markets. We can get, you know, fabric from Nigeria coming in without hurdles. So you need the environment to thrive. As I said, with Oswald Boateng, he probably realized that the environment for me to thrive in Africa is a little bit difficult. Let me go to London from a London perspective and build base. So we don't want to leave the country. We don't want the skill set leaving the country. We actually want the skill set here. But we need investors, I mean, in private equity players that actually see the vision and they've got patience capital. We need guys with patience capital because, you know, if you look at a Silicon Valley, the likes of Airbnb, the likes of, you know, Apple, there was private equity, but they had capital that was giving them leg room. You know, you can't have, you know, a plane lift off if there's actually no runway. So we need some runway. And I think we don't have enough investors saying, I've got patience capital for the next 2-5 years, grow the market from point A to B, where we've got store internationally. I mean, my boss has the first store in New York now. He should be on 20 stores, you know, so give him funding, give him the backing and also the patience to yield return on investment.
Yes, yes. I want to take some questions now. I've got a message from Philippe. Philippe Mazibuko, who is an incredible stylist, one of the best creative thought leaders we have in this country. And he's asking on the WhatsApp line, does the designers showcasing in global stage mean economics or is it just exposure?
Clement, a brilliant question. And I think exposure is a very dangerous one because, I mean, for us personally, it was the first and foremost was how do we get into the market, unlock the market and find buyers? So what we did initially before we even left, we started already speaking to specific buyers that we wanted to showcase the brand to say, this is the kind of product that we offer. This is the direction. Are you willing to invest in a piece? We also spoke to different brands to say, can we get sponsorships? Can we work on a collab perspective? Because the economics of it doesn't make sense for us to spend the money, pay the runway shows, and then you don't make money out of it. But a lot of the times what creatives do, they just want to get their name out there. So it boils back to having the business mindset at the forefront because it's great. You showcase, you've got some PR, but what is the return? How does it look? I mean, if you were sitting with investors, and this is important for creatives, if you were sitting with investors and say, okay, Clement, here you go, we're giving you 200 million. Those investors are not, that's not a donation. They want a return on their investment. So as designers as well, we need to start having a mindset that says, what is the return? So if you were going there for exposure, what does that look like? Is it going to unlock a collaboration with Beyonce? Is it going to unlock a collaboration with so-and-so? So there's a future economic benefit. Then I'm happy, but you cannot just showcase for the sake of it. And then, and you have to unfortunately turn down some of these offers because it's a lot of money if there is no return or you don't see the uptake in clientele. I mean, as I always say, exposure doesn't pay the rent.
It doesn't. And people think when they tell you, no, we're going to give you exposure, somehow you must be able to carry out the costs to be even on that platform, even when it's not even making economic sense to you. Another message here says, hello, please can you ask about just some of the fake outfits that we are seeing at the shops? For instance, I saw an Amakhosa fake dress at one of the shops in town, and I got so angry. That's a message from Anonymous in Captain Park. How big of a problem is that where people take what you've custom made as fashion designers and they start, you know, replicating it and selling it at a lower price and, you know, they're getting the design almost right. I mean, it's not always going to be right, but that compromises on your brand.
Spot on. And I mean, you spent a lot of years building a brand and it takes one thing to drop it. Because, for example, you find that Makota in Small Street and you start wearing it and people say, oh, you can find it there. Guess what? Those are all your clients that's supposed to be buying from you, generating, and you're feeding families. And I think we need to start realizing that there's a bigger impact in this. You know, it's like criminality. That is actually a crime. You know, you are actually feeding families that now you're causing a crime elsewhere. It's actually impacting because tomorrow my doors are closed because now I can't afford because the sales are not going up because it's somewhere down at a street or an alley where someone is replicating the product. But it also speaks to the policies. And I think, Clement, we need to be very strict. There's a lot of dumping that's coming in from the outside countries and they're leaving a lot of, it's actually dropping our pricing. And because of that dumping that's happening in South Africa, we're actually at a point where We can't compete. You know, you might ask, but what's happened to the factories? Why don't we have them? We can't have the factories because I can import a whole bale, a whole tonnage coming in into South Africa, a labor market, and put a brand on it. It's out in the streets. So then it becomes very difficult. I dare you to do the same in Paris. Try and replicate the Louis Vuitton. You will be in jail very quickly because they understand what their brand means. They understand what it does for the country's economics. So it's important for us, you know, and policymakers to start understanding that the dumping that's happening and the fake goods that are coming to our streets are actually killing the economy. They're not growing the economy. They're actually killing it.
Mphahlela Mokgatle, co-founder of the House of Decorum, thank you so much for making time for us. And good luck to you and the business. And congratulations to you and your colleagues in the fashion industry here in South Africa and the continent for really flying this flag high on the global stage. It's 3 minutes before 11.